Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Lord Chaitanya smiled and accepted the invitation of the Brahmana. He made this gesture to show his mercy to the Mayavadi sannyasis. Very short purport. Tapan Mishra and Chandrasekhar appealed to the lotus feet of the Lord regarding their grief at the criticism of him by the sannyasis in Benares. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu merely smiled, yet he wanted to fulfill the desires of his devotees, and the opportunity came when the Brahmana came to request him to accept his invitation to be present in the midst of the other sannyasis. This coincidence was made possible by the omnipotence of the Lord. Om Agyan Timidandasya Gena Jena Salakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vistam Staptitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Mayam Dadati Swapadantikam Bandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrijatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sarvadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Deena Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneswari Prishyavanu Suti Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Thiruvischa Kriba Sindhu Paiva Cha Patitanam Pavane Bhyo Vaishnave Dvona Mahona Ajano Lambi Dabujo Kanakama Takso Sankirtanai Papitaro Kamalaya Takso Vishwambaro, Dwijabaro, Yugadharma follow, Vande Jagat Priyakaro, Karuna Avataro, Sri Krishna Chaitana, Prabhu Nithananda, Sri Advaita Gadadha, Sri Vasari, Gauda Bhakta Vrinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So, apparent coincidence, but coincidence is understood by the arrangement of the Lord. There's no such thing as coincidence, chance. These things are words that we use in order to explain something we don't know the cause of. But there's a cause behind everything. Ishwara Parma Krishna Sachit Ananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karna Karnam. Sarva Karna Karnam means that person who causes all the other causes to be caused. That's Krishna. He's the source of everything. And when he has his will can never be thwarted by any material arrangement. His will is supreme. And when he wants his will to manifest, it manifests. And sometimes, most of the times, practically all the times, people can't see his will behind the activity. But here it's explained that if it wasn't for the purports of his divine grace, how would we understand that this was simply not a coincidence, but an arrangement by the Lord that somehow or other, which is quite unusual, this Brahman appears in the association of Lord Chaitanya and his devotees and he requests him to come and take part in the assembly with the Mayavadis. It's not coincidental because these things generally don't happen because the Brahman knows that this invitation is unreasonable, but it was the arrangement of the Lord. And here it explains why it was the arrangement of the Lord. There's many reasons, but two are mentioned. One is to show mercy to the Mayavadi sannyasis. There were 60,000 Mayavadi sannyasis in Benares. Benares, Kashi, what's the other word? Varanasi, three different names. I think the oldest name is, but Benares is the oldest traditional name. Now it's called Kashi, right? Yeah. So this has always been a bastion, a stronghold for Mayavads. Lord Shiva's worshipped there a lot, because the Shankaracharyas were somewhat prominent in establishing temples there. And it's also famous for what? What's so famous about Benares? Who knows? The Burning Ghats, right? The Burning Ghats, right? One great devotee, before he became a devotee, used to tell me when he was traveling around India, he would go to Benares, Kashi, and just sit at the Burning Ghats and watch the bodies burn. He said this was a great meditation, knowing the temporary nature of everything. And we can just imagine everyone is so proud and so, won't we say, enthusiastic to keep the body going. But then we see what's the result. It turns into three things. What are the three things? Ashes, stool, earth. Either eaten by animals, stool, buried in the ground, earth, or burned at the ghats, ashes, right? That's the destination of this body. You can choose which one you want. But that's not you, so don't worry about it. It's just not you. We get a little bit overwhelmed by the idea of this body we have. But the best use of this body is to use it in the devotional service of the Lord. Lord Chaitanya is taking advantage of this particular situation to do what? Not only to purify and to bring the Mayavadi sannyas. That's why he took sannyas. This is one of the main reasons why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, because he knew he couldn't reach such personalities as a grihastha. They would just think, well, who is this grihastha? He can't speak to us. But in the role of a sannyasi, he appeared, at least from their perspective, to be one of them. Because why? Lord Chaitanya took sannyas from Keshava Bharati. And Keshava Bharati was a Mayavadi sannyasi. So they accepted him, but they accepted him as a, what we call, a lesser sannyasi. Not someone equally. There are 10 different categories of sannyas according to their particular names and their brahmachari assistants. So Bharati is considered one of the lower categories of sannyas, whereas Saraswati, Prakasananda Saraswati, is considered more, what we say, respected amongst the Mayavadis as being more elevated, more learned, like that. But Lord Chaitanya had a plan. And his plan is to make the whole, you might say, universe Krishna conscious. So he took sannyas, and that was one of the main reasons so he could be able to reach such personalities. That's the mercy of the Lord. The Lord wants everyone to become Krishna conscious. It doesn't really affect him whether we're Krishna conscious or not. He remains the Lord. He is Atmarama. He's self-contained. He's fully self-satisfied. But because of his loving relationship between himself and all living entities, he wants to see the living entities get out of the illusion of suffering. Suffering is an illusion. Material suffering is an illusion. That's mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, one verse in the 7th chapter of the 1st canto, I believe it's verse number 6, where it says that Vyasadeva wrote down the Vedic literatures because people don't understand that the miseries of this material world have nothing to do with them. It has to do with their body, in which they are not. So the miseries and the so-called pleasures of this material world are superfluous to our existence as individuals. But because we are so connected to the body, and sometimes very attached to the body, it appears like I'm enjoying and I'm in suffering by the situations that come by way of the material energy. But it's all an illusion. It's a dream. Try to remember that, because if you do, you'll always be happy in any situation. Even if your body is dying, you'll be happy, because it's not you that's dying. We have to remember that, because it's so important in our process of Krishna consciousness. The body is simply used for a vehicle to execute devotional service. And whether you have this body or you get another one, you can still do the same thing. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that if you take a Dekki machine, there's one song, Dekki. A Dekki is a wheat husking machine. And that machine will do only one thing, husk wheat. So if you take the machine out of the, what we say, this realm, and you bring it to heaven, it does what? Husk wheat. Does the same thing. You can take it to hell, it does the same thing. So a devotee, wherever they are, they're going to do the same thing. Serve the Lord. Whether it's in this body, or better body, or lesser body, or in the spiritual body. So the devotee is not so much concerned about the material situation, but he's concerned about using the material situation for the execution of devotional service. And that way we can transcend this material body. Lord Chaitanya smiled when he got the invitation. He knew this was coming. And he also knew that this would please his devotees. His devotees were really, really concerned that he was being criticized, blasphemed, minimized. Their hearts were so, what we say, it was like struck with a thunderbolt. This is a very important point to understand, that when devotees hear criticism, either of the Lord or of another devotee, it breaks their heart. Sometimes they become so angry that they just want to retaliate. Yesterday I was sitting here after class and one devotee came up to me. He said, "My daughter has a question." And I said, "What's the question?" I said, "Well, how old is your daughter?" He said, 10 years old. She's reading the Srimad Bhagavatam, and she's reading the part where Daksha blasphemes Lord Shiva. And there it mentions that when you hear blaspheming of a great soul, you should do one of three things. You should kill the blasphemer. If you can't do that, kill yourself. Because you're not, that just to hear that is worse than having a material body. And the third one is to, what we say, go away. Or defeat the personality. So if you kill yourself, especially in Western countries, I mean, not yourself, you kill somebody in Western countries, you can expect it's going to be a problem. We have a prison ministry, and I'm pretty much active, so I'll have another candidate if you decide to kill. So please do not increase my service in that direction. I have enough service. So the other thing is we don't do that in Western countries. And we don't do it anywhere anymore because the world has changed. But in Vedic culture, that was considered to be acceptable. Or what we say, the natural reaction for such an offender. And then the other thing is killing yourself. But if killing yourself will be a problem because it's not easy to kill yourself. It's really hard. The statistics in America are every day, 1,200 people attempt suicide. Anybody want to go to America? Okay. That's why I'm here. 1,200 people every day commit suicide, attempt. But only 120 are successful. In other words, 10%. It's a very difficult job to kill yourself. And, of course, if you are successful and you happen to be a brahmana, then you're going to take birth in a very, what we say, degraded situation because killing a brahmana is a great offense. So, even if it's yourself. So that is highly disregarded. You should not even consider these first two things. But the thing is to defeat, by philosophical discussion, the offender. And if you can't do that, then the other option is to walk away. To hear such blasphemy is such poison. Chandrasekhar, he's the maternal uncle of Lord Chaitanya. Tapan Mishra is very dear to Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya gave him a lot of personal association. Both of these persons, their hearts are destroyed by hearing this criticism of Mahaprabhu. So they can't take it anymore. And finally, the Lord arranges for this Brahmin to come so he can quell their, what we say, anxiety like that. So this is very instructive for our own devotional service. Jai Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda, Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman, Sri Sri Gaur Nithai. This is very instructive for our own devotional service, that if we hear such things, we should be very enthusiastic to react in a way that I remember I was on Sankirtan one time and I was distributing Prabhupada's books. And I'm not a book distributor, so I was giving it a try. And so I had some small paperback books. And I was talking to this one gentleman, and he was looking at, I think it was Chant and Be Happy, one of those books. And I think on the back cover, there was a picture of Prabhupada. So he turned the book onto the back cover side, and he said something derogatory in relationship to Prabhupada. I immediately got so angry. I don't know why. I just got so angry that he just looked at me like he was seeing the Yamadutas. Probably looked like a Yamaduta too. And he just like handed me back the book and he was gone. So I felt good about that. I felt like I fulfilled the desire of my spiritual master by acting in the proper way. And it was a natural reaction. And then to hear such things, if we don't become disturbed, there's something wrong with us. There's something wrong with us if we don't hear the blasphemy. And this happens a lot, sometimes in the media, and sometimes by former ISKCON devotees. Sometimes we hear that a lot. Just like it's mentioned that when Ramanujacharya, this one king, Kolatunga, he didn't like the worship of Vishnu in his, what we say, his dominion, his area. So he established the worship of Shiva as topmost. And we should defeat anyone who is against Shiva. Now, Lord Ramanujacharya was very active in spreading the glories of Lord Vishnu. So one of the assistants of Kolatunga was a former associate, or what we say, a brahmachari, or a member of Ramanujacharya's group, and he had defected. In other words, as we say, he blooped. He blooped. And now he became one of the entourage of the king. So he knew all about Ramanujacharya. So he arranged for Kolatunga's guards and assistants to go after Ramanujacharya and to actually kill him or destroy him in one way or another. Of course, that's a long story where Koresh, Lord Ramanujacharya's personal assistant, took the place of Ramanujacharya and came to the presence of Kolatunga. And there was a debate, and Koresh was so empowered by Ramanujacharya to speak philosophical teachings that he defeated all the pundits. And the king became so mortified that he said, let's kill him. Can't defeat him. So, of course, the king had remembered that many, many years ago, Ramanujacharya had saved his daughter from a ghost. She was 8 years old, and it was a ghost that was haunting her existence. So Ramanujacharya came, and the ghost was fleed away. It's a nice story describing that. So the king had forgotten what Ramanujacharya looked like, so he didn't recognize him. And this Koresh was there in the place of Ramanujacharya. So he said, well, since he had saved my daughter from a ghost, you don't have to kill him. Just torture him. Nice king, right? So they actually took Koresh and his associate. I forgot his name. He was an elderly devotee in the association of Ramanujacharya. Do you remember his name? Can't remember his name. And they took him out into the woods and they blinded them both. And they left him for death. The elderly devotee, he died. And Koresh came back to Ramanujacharya. And so this was all done are caused apparently by this defective devotee. So sometimes we find that the most enthusiastic to blaspheme devotees are former devotees. We have to be very, very careful because of certain bad experiences persons may have. So we want to avoid that type of association, because just to hear it disturbs our Krishna consciousness. It just disturbs our Krishna. We want to glorify the Lord. We want to glorify the devotees. It says that in this pastime of daksha blaspheming Lord Shiva, it says that there's four ways to evaluate or to view another person. One can see only their bad qualities. That was daksha. Daksha, Shiva has so many good qualities. In fact, he has no bad qualities. But daksha was very enthusiastic to find something wrong. And he took that little apparent, which was not a discretion, but an apparent discretion, a deviation by Shiva, and he turned it into a whole program of blaspheming against Lord Shiva. So much so that the assembly was so disturbed that it was practically a riot. And in fact, later on, it did cause a major, major riot. Now, it says that that's the daksha mentality. When one sees simply bad qualities. A person may have a lot of good qualities, but they see only one bad quality, and they make that the person's, you know, personality and character description. That's a daksha, or daksha consciousness anyway. Little better than that, or a lot better than that, is to see a person's good qualities and their faults, to reject their faults and focus on the good qualities. Higher than that is to see a potential's bad qualities as, or a person's apparent negative qualities as potential good qualities. That they may have some defect, but actually it's simply a good quality that's not being manifested yet. Such as a person may be passionate. Well, okay. But actually that means they're very enthusiastic to do devotional service. In other words, taking an apparent negative thing that one sees by one's consciousness and seeing that actually this is a good quality that's just simply covered over. And higher than that, and the highest of all, is not to see, to see only good qualities. And that's the highest, of course. So the Mayavad sannyasis, due to their philosophically learning, conjectured or concluded that this sannyasi is simply a sentimentalist. What is he doing? He's singing and dancing with the same group of people like him. And they're making a public show of it. Where does this say in the scriptures that sannyasi is supposed to engage in such activities? So, due to their philosophically learning, they're thinking that sannyas simply means, or Mayavad sannyas, means he's simply to debate Vedanta. That's all. And one who can debate the best is considered to be the most knowledgeable, most learned, and most respected, like that. So they had no understanding of the principle of bhakti, the devotion. Knowledge, or philosophical knowledge, if it doesn't lead to devotional service, it's rama eva hi kevalam. What does that mean? It means it's a useless waste of time. Our cultivation of knowledge, our chanting of our mantras, our austerities, our penances, our pujas, our worship, all of it is useless if it doesn't awaken love for Krishna. It's all simply external. So we see that sometimes, we see there are certain groups that are very enthusiastic to perform all the different rituals and activities. But when it comes to devotion, it's simply a formality, like that. In other words, external show of devotion is actually seen as devotion. Their hearts remain the same. They don't change inside. They may do so many things outside. So in our process of devotional service, we want to awaken our natural love for Krishna. And so one should act in a way that is devotional, which helps to bring out our devotional qualities. There's an old saying in I think it's, I don't know, maybe it's in your country. Fake it till you make it. You ever heard that one? Fake it till you make it. Okay. But really, you're not faking it. You're acting in a devotional way, because even if you don't feel like that, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter. Feelings come and go. I don't feel like dancing. Well, you should dance, not for yourself, but for the pleasure of the devotees and the pleasure of the Lord. You should sing enthusiastically. Why? For the pleasure of the Lord and pleasure of devotees. It opens up the heart. It awakens the bhakti. When we act according to the principles that are given according to the devotional activity, we get inspired and our heart awakens in Krishna consciousness. But feelings come and go. Feelings come and go. They're, in fact, sometimes they come so fast and they go so fast you can't even recognize them coming and going. So how you feel is not really important. I feel angry. Who cares? Maybe your mother does. That's about the only one. We don't. Our feelings come and go. But if we connect our material feelings into a devotional context, then we awaken our spiritual mood or spiritual feelings. So if we simply act in a loving way, a devotional way, it comes out more and more, and it becomes natural. So Lord Chaitanya is deemed a sentimentalist because he's singing and dancing in the streets. We were talking yesterday that without sentiment, you're dead. But what is sentiment? Spiritual sentiment. Spiritual life is full of sentiment, but in the right mood. That mood is the mood of service to please the object of devotion or the object of one's service. That's all. And Prabhupada says, when you come before the deities, you say, my dear Lord, I am so fallen. You are so merciful. Please give me some service. He said, this is how we approach the Lord. This is darshan. This is darshan. Because Krishna wants to see you. We can't see Krishna. But if Krishna sees you, then you can see Krishna. You can see Krishna more and more like that. So Lord Chaitanya, he's concerned, and he makes the arrangement because he's the all-powerful Supreme Personality of Godhead, playing the role of a pure devotee of the Lord. And he smiled. It's like when you know something is going to happen, and you know it's going to be good, and it hasn't happened yet, but then when it does happen, you smile. Because you kind of expect it. So Lord Chaitanya was expecting these things to unfold in the way they did. And he was happy. He was happy because his devotees would be pacified in due course of time. He would defeat the Mayavadi sannyasis, not through philosophical debates. That came later. That was the last thing. This is also instructive too. Lord Chaitanya is teaching us how to preach. What's the best play of preaching? Is behavior, really. One's behavior is really the fundamental basis of one's, what we say, relationship with the Lord. How Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, when he was enthusiastically trying to inspire his preachers to go to the West, he told them, Western people, they'll be very difficult to preach to. They will not understand this knowledge. It'll be too far beyond their comprehension. But they will listen to you if you have one quality. Trinada Pisani Chena Tayor Ivasa Hishnuna. He said, if you're tolerant, humble, and respectful, they'll open their minds to your words. Like that. So that's the way to preach in this age, of course. We do that in such a way that it inspires our enthusiasm in devotional service. So Lord Chaitanya gives the formula. And that's how he approached the Mayavadis. He just simply sat at the door by the most unclean place in the whole place. And what did he do? He just sat there And he didn't say anything. They turned and said, "What are you doing in that? That's the places that we wash our feet. That's considered unclean." Lord Chaitanya was humble. He was showing that I'm not even qualified to sit amongst all of you. You are so exalted. I'm sitting here. And when the sannyasi started to question him about Vedanta, what did he say? He said, "I don't know anything. My spiritual master said, I can't study philosophy. I just chant Hare Krishna. That's all I can do. That was my instruction. So that's what I'm doing, chanting the glories of the Lord. I don't have any knowledge." And by his humility, he got their trust, he got their attention. And then when the time came, he spoke powerful spiritual knowledge, which astounded them so much so that they understood that actually we don't even know the Vedas. We think we know the Vedas, but you're actually revealing the Vedas in such a complete way. They were changed, transformed by his humility and by his, what we say, respect for them. So that's what it takes to preach in this age. It's difficult. It's very difficult. Lord Chaitanya is giving us the formula here. And so, gradually, of course, the Mayavadis all come around and they become Vaishnavas. Lord Chaitanya converted 60,000 Mayavadis. That's Lord Chaitanya. In fact, he made practically the whole subcontinent of India Krishna conscious by his presence. But of course, after he left, everything changed. That's the way history is. So, the Lord wants to please his devotees. The Lord wants to inspire the preaching by making everyone Krishna conscious. Any questions?